Hello and welcome to episode number 64 of the AFTV Newscast, being recorded December 2nd, 2016. My name is Elias Saba, and this is where I talk about the week's Fire TV news. I run AFTVnews.com, pretty much the biggest Fire TV and kind of Amazon-related website out there. And so this is the podcast where I kind of talk about the week's biggest news. Sorry I did not announce ahead of time that I was skipping Thanksgiving week as far as the podcast goes. That week is always just kind of a dead week. The biggest thing happening that week are the Black Friday deals and that sort of stuff. So there's really no news. So that's why I skipped it, you know, and also allowed me to spend more time with the family during the holiday weekend. Hopefully you guys had a good weekend. Hopefully you guys had a good Thanksgiving day and maybe picked up some good deals on Black Friday. Thank you to everybody who followed all of my deal posts that day. It was definitely a long day. You know, the deal started Thanksgiving morning, Thursday morning, and basically just lasted through Friday. And then Cyber Monday deal started, I believe, Saturday, and that lasted through Monday. And so it was definitely a busy weekend for me. But, you know, you guys like that deal stuff. And I really appreciate everybody who checks the site and looks through those deals and clicks through and maybe make some purchases here and there, because I do get a kickback out of all of that, and it's really the number one way for you guys to support my site and me and my family and everything, is to actually, you know, look at those deals and actually take advantage of them if you think they're worth it. This should be a fun packed show. We've got a new Fire TV update rolling out, bringing in a new interface, some new features, so we'll talk a little bit about that. We've got a lot of app news, some SPMC news, some Plex news, DirecTV Now, big new streaming cable service, over the top service that just got released. A lot of people are interested in that. Got some Echo news. I mean, there's a lot to talk about, so let's go ahead and get right into it. So first thing we'll talk about is that new software update. So there's a new software update rolling out right now. It's update version 5.2.4.0. It's rolling out to the Fire TV 2 and the Fire TV Stick 2. Those are the latest versions of each of those devices right now. Only those devices are getting them at the moment. This update will roll out later. Maybe not this specific version, but an update with these new features that I'll talk about in a second will start rolling out to the first generation Fire TV and first generation Fire TV Stick probably later this year, but maybe early next year. We don't know for sure, but Amazon did say that this update is rolling out to the newer devices, the second gen devices first, and then going to be rolling out to the first gen devices. So the big thing that this new 5.2.4.0 software update brings is the new user interface for the Fire TV line of devices. We knew this interface was coming. We've known for about a month now. Amazon kind of teased it for a little bit. They released some images. I was able to find some internal images on the development documentation also. But yeah, this new interface is rolling out. I still haven't received the update myself, so I don't have a full overview of it like I usually do for all of the big updates. But definitely next week's episode will likely be that big overview with all the new features. We do know a little bit about this update already, some new features that it brings. Right off the bat, you could see here from this image, if you are watching the video version, that Kodi is appearing on the home screen. Kodi is working. Side loading is working. So no fears there. I know every time a new update comes out, one of the first questions I get asked is, does this update mess with side loading at all? Does it mess with Kodi at all? Is anything wrong there? But, you know, from what I've heard so far, again, I haven't received it in myself, so that's why I haven't officially posted, you know, this update works fine with Kodi, side loading is still good. I haven't technically officially posted that on the site yet, but I've heard from people who have received the update so far, and they've said Kodi's working just fine. It's showing up on the home screen. If you are not seeing Kodi, I do have a guide that lets you walks you through a whole bunch of different steps you could do. It usually has to do with the fact that the Fire TV's interface just needs to realize that you launched Kodi, and so sometimes when you launch it in a certain way or when you exit the app in a certain way, it doesn't register with the actual OS of the device, and that's why it doesn't show up on the actual home screen. This happens with sideloaded apps in general sometimes. So there's just a few things you could do, and it's pretty easy usually to get it onto the home screen. So look down below for a link to that. It'll guide you through a bunch of steps of what you could do. There are usually pretty simple steps. So one new feature that this new interface brings, actually a new feature, not just like a reorganization of the interface. So this new update adds a new notification center to the Fire TV. So if you go into settings, once you get this new update and you get into that new interface, you'll see there's a new notifications area in the settings, and that's where apps and the Fire OS can actually put notifications and tell you about things. So before, on the old Fire TV operating system and the old interface, there were ways for apps and the OS to actually notify you. You may have seen them. They're little pop-ups essentially that would appear in the lower right corner of your screen, and you can actually like select them and or like press a menu button to interact with them, or you could just leave them and then they would just fade away. So before, that was the only way to really get a notification on the Fire TV. And so now there's a new notification center that adds one more way that's a little less intrusive. So most notifications will probably use this notification center as opposed to that pop-up that actually, like, you know, would actually disturb you, you know, and actually get your attention like that. So to run through this notification feature, first up on the new interface at the very top, there is a horizontal main navigation menu. At the very end of that menu is the settings option that takes you to the settings interface. And if you have a notification waiting, there will be a little bell icon. If you can see here on the video version, there's a little tiny bell icon in the corner of that settings button. And so that's really the only indication that you have a notification waiting for you in the notification center on the Fire TV. And again, if you hit that settings button, you'll go and you'll see the notification icon there in the settings, and there'll be a little numerical indicator letting you know how many notifications you have, if there are new notifications there. Once you click into that notification center, you'll see, as you'd expect, a list of all of your notifications. It's a horizontally scrolling list, and you can dismiss one at a time, or you can dismiss them all through the little menu option inside of that notification center. So one of the most common notifications you'll see in the notification center are new app updates that are pending. That is, of course, if you have automatic app updates turned off, or is it have manual updates turned on? I'm not sure which way the setting goes, I forget, but I think the non-default option is to have manual updates, essentially. And so if you have flipped that switch and you have manual updates, then previously you'd actually, on the app icon underneath, it would tell you whether there was an update, and that was really the only indication that a update was available for that app. But now you'll actually get an actual notification in the notification center to let you know there's an update. So really handy there. It looks like all app update notifications that come from basically the app store on the Fire TV, that's the app that's actually triggering the notification, but those will all be grouped together. And so if you click into one of those notifications, you'll see a list of all the apps that are available to update. You can dismiss them and update later, or you can update them right there within the notification center. So the interface looks really nice. Looks like a really nice addition to the Fire TV. It's kind of something that was missing that wasn't really necessary, I guess, but it's still nice to have, just because a lot of these apps on the Fire TV, they come from smartphones, they come from tablets. And on Android tablets and Android smartphones, there's a notification tray that basically, if you swipe down from the top of the screen, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Android operating system on things other than the Fire TV, but there's a notification tray on the top. If you swipe down, that's basically where apps can notify you. That's where all notifications go on the regular smartphone and tablet version of Android. And so that tray, or something that basically represents that tray, or is essentially the same as that tray, was missing on the Fire TV. And so apps that would try to notify you in that official tray method basically did nothing, you know. If an app tried to actually initiate one of those notifications, the Fire TV would basically just ignore it previously. So this is why this was added, I think, just so that app developers can actually notify you of something. So within the actual notification that a third-party app can actually trigger, there can be actions. So, for example, you can get a notification that there's new news, or there's a new feature or something like that within an actual app. And from the notification, you can actually click through and go directly into that feature. So perhaps in the future, Fire TV developers will actually, you know, use this new notification option. You know, because before, again, they only had that pop-up. And in general, it's bad practice to use that pop-up, because it's meant to be like something's wrong. It's an alert, you know. It's, you know, you're not supposed to use it just to get people to use your app again. And so thankfully, because some developers do use the notification features to basically just spam their app, essentially, Amazon thankfully in this new update has put in the option to actually mute apps or block apps from being able to add items into the notification center. So in the notification center, there's a settings area. You go there and you can actually turn off notifications on an app by app basis, which is really nice. Thankfully, they did not forget to add that feature in, because it's fairly important. If you're watching the video version here, you can see there's also this do not interrupt option. By default, it's turned off. You can turn it on. This actually does not affect the notification center at all. What it actually does is it affects the pop-up notifications. So if you have do not interrupt on, basically all pop-up notifications will be suppressed. And instead of them popping up in the lower right corner of the Fire TV's screen, they'll actually just be sent to the notification center. And so they'll basically just appear as that little bell icon in the corner, and then you can get to them there. So if you prefer to just not be notified by anything as far as a pop-up goes, you can always turn that feature on. For those pop-up notifications that appear in the lower right corner of the Fire TV, now if they pop up and you don't actually manually dismiss them or actually take action on them and they just disappear on their own, they'll actually get moved into the notification center. And so only if you actually go in and actually interact with them when they appear will they just basically be gone forever. So that's just something to keep in mind. Overall, I think it's a nice little feature that Amazon has added here with the notification center. Just a little better organization on the Fire TV. And so nice to see here on the new interface. Just so you know, again, as I mentioned, with anytime there's a new update, these updates roll out slowly. And so this update just started rolling out the last few days. So you likely haven't received it yet. There's no way to force this update. You can go in and actually check for updates under the system settings or settings system about area of the Fire TV. But if it's not your device's turn to update, it won't update. Again, I haven't received the update myself on any of my devices. And so look next week for a full overview and more coverage of all the new features and all the new changes that this update adds. For now, these few things that I've talked about already are the only things we know about or the only things I know about so far just from you guys and hearing things. But I'll definitely have more coverage of this update next week's episode. All right, moving into some app news for the Fire TV. SPMC has actually released a new update, 16.5.0, to their app, and it adds 4K support as well as refresh rate syncing support. I've talked about these in the past when Mr. MC added them to that app. Both SPMC and Mr. MC are forks of Kodi. They're basically former developers of actual Kodi who have forked off and created their own versions and are concentrating more on streaming TV devices like the Fire TV, like Android TV, like Apple TV, those kind of things. So these are as official forks as you can get, essentially. So, I fully support these forks, both SPMC and Mr. MC. And so I like to cover them whenever there's a significant update with those apps. So this new update to SPMC, first of all, adds 4K support. And so if you have the Fire TV 2, that's the only device in the lineup that actually supports 4K resolution 2160p. If you have that and you launch SPMC, you'll be able to go into settings and actually set it to basically output in 4K, and that way you can watch local content in 4K. Or I don't know if there are any streams. I personally don't stream through Kodi, so I'm not sure if there are any streams through 4K in 4K for SPMC and for Kodi, but that's there. The future version 17 of Kodi, I believe, is going to also add 4K. So those of you who like to use the official version of Kodi and don't use SPMC or Mr. MC, you'll probably get some 4K support in the near future, hopefully. I think they're on beta 6 now of version 17.0, basically the next big update for Kodi. I have seen in the comments of my post that a lot of people are having issues. This 16.5 version does seem to be a little bit buggy as far as the 4K and the refresh rate syncing. So I'm sure there'll probably be a 16.5.1 in the near future. So if you are having issues with 4K and refresh rate syncing with this new SPMC, just hold up. It's not like buggy to the point where it's crashing or anything like that. It's just these new features, these two big new features, are not working for some people, it seems. One thing I would recommend, if you do have a Fire TV 2 and you're looking to use this for 4K, make sure your display settings in your Fire TV are set to automatic. Mr. MC's developers back in the day told me that the only way for their app to detect what resolution or to actually switch the resolution of the device is if the device is set to automatic. If you manually basically select a resolution within the actual Fire TV settings section, then the app themselves have to basically abide by it and cannot actually make switches or make changes to the resolution and I believe the refresh rate. So make sure your setting is set to automatic. That way the apps themselves can actually freely make that switch back and forth if they need to. So that might be the reason why some people are not getting 4K to work within this new SPMC version. But just a tip there for you. Again, I don't know myself if this for sure is the issue. But again, I'm sure the SPMC's developer, Koying, will address this soon enough. Again, the app itself is pretty stable. So if you switch to it, worst case is you won't get the new features, but it'll still be pretty good. So there's no downside to actually switching to it. For those who are interested in trying SPMC, you can run SPMC alongside Kodi. The two apps are completely independent. Back to the other new feature that this app adds is the refresh rate syncing, or this app update that is. So refresh rate syncing is where the app SPMC will try to sync your television's refresh rate with the video file that is being played within SPMC. And so most video files are in that 29 or 24-ish hertz or frames per second, and your TV is probably set to either 60 or 50, depending on which region you're in. And so getting your TV to actually switch to match the frame rate of the actual video file that you're playing makes the video experience better. Let's just put it that way. The actual details of what it's actually doing and why it's better, it's called 3-2 pull down. I'm not going to get into it. I'll try to find some articles about it and link those down below. But those of you who know the benefits of refresh rate syncing don't need me to tell you about it. And those of you who don't know about it or never really heard about it, probably won't really care, because you don't really see it until you actually look for it. For the most part, audio or video files and home theater enthusiasts will probably hate me for saying that, but in general, for most people, refresh rate syncing is something they don't really notice. And so but those who want it really want it, and so it's here. If it is working, hopefully, but hopefully there'll be an update. But nice little feature. Of course, SPMC is completely for free. I strongly recommend you give it a shot and support the developer. Go to their site. I'll put a link down below and support that developer. He does a great job keeping SPMC going. So moving along on a related note, so Plex has done actually something that's a little bit odd, but interesting that they've done this. For those who don't know, Plex is another media theater, home theater app, essentially. It basically organizes your content and lets you access your content from a lot of different places and acts as a server. And then there are clients on the Fire TV. So it's very similar to Kodi, SPMC, Mr. MC. Plex is actually a fork, a very old fork of the original XBMC app that actually, you know, went the corporate route and actually, you know, made it into a nice business. The guys who started Plex or who broke off of the actual old XBMC. So again, I support Plex just as much as I support Kodi and SBMC and Mr. MC. So definitely worth giving it a shot. Definitely some advantages to Plex over Kodi and vice versa. There really isn't one app that just kind of is better than all others as far as actually, like, you know, being a media player, media center app. So what Plex has done here is actually they've released an official Kodi add-on. What that means is basically Kodi has the ability to essentially expand its capabilities through add-ons. Some people call them plugins, but basically by Plex releasing an add-on, an official one. There have been unofficial Plex plugins in the past, but this one's actually from the actual company Plex and from their official developers. And so this actually allows you to access all of your Plex server content from directly within Kodi. It does not allow you to access that content from the Kodi interface itself. When you actually go into the Plex add-on that's inside of Kodi, you're actually launching a separate interface. It's a very nice interface and actually a little bit different than the regular Plex app. So there is a regular Plex app on the Fire TV. It's a free app. You can try it. If you want some of those more advanced features, you have to pay a subscription. There's a Plex Pass subscription. I believe it's $4.99 a month. But if you prepay for an annual subscription, you can save a little bit there. But this interface within Kodi, it doesn't use Kodi's actual interface. So I mentioned that because Mr. MC, which is that other Kodi fork that I talked about, they actually added Plex support for within the app. But what they actually do is they actually connect to a Plex server that you might have running and actually show you all of your Plex content within the regular Kodi interface. So just as you're browsing your regular local content through Kodi, you can browse a Plex server's content through Kodi. Or through Mr. MC, that is. But this Plex add-on is actually a separate interface. Again, I don't know how many people would actually use this, since there is a very good, very nice Plex app for the Fire TV. But if you do like it all within one place, within Kodi, then you can actually install this. The add-on is universal, so it works on the Fire TV, Fire TV Stick. Also works on Windows installations of Kodi. Also works on the Raspberry Pi Kodi version. So it's a very nice universal add-on. I would see that, you know, maybe on the Raspberry Pi it would be more useful, because there might not be like an official Plex app for that particular OS, for example, or some Linux OS that you're running might have issues there. But if you're doing it from within a Kodi add-on, Kodi, it basically works on almost everything. And so, you know, having this add-on there. So I think that's where it's most useful. But again, put links down below to more information about this and where you can get it, where you can download it. Right now, it is kind of a private add-on where only those who have a Plex Pass can access it and can download it. But eventually, it will be released to the general public, you know, for free for everybody to try out. So again, links down below to more info. All right, next up, I wanted to talk a little bit about DirecTV Now. It's a new streaming service, new over-the-top, basically online cable subscription. Essentially, it's as close to a cable subscription as you can get, but through the internet. You know, very similar to Sling TV, very similar to PlayStation View. Those are definitely its two biggest competitors, more so PlayStation View than Sling TV. Sling TV is more of a minimalistic kind of a la carte, you know, ad pack. You get the $20 base package of channels, and then you add packages of channels that are kind of related to each other. Whereas DirecTV Now and PlayStation View, they're more the traditional cable subscription package scheme where you basically are paying, you know, about $30, $35 for the base bundle of channels, and those channels don't really have much to do with each other. And then if you move up into packaging deals or bundle deals, they're not really themed in any way. You're just getting more and more channels. So DirecTV Now is from DirecTV, the satellite company essentially that got bought out by AT&T. And so this is essentially AT&T's online, streaming TV service. And so it launched earlier this week, and they've released a Fire TV app available for all devices. You do have to have Fire OS 5, so it doesn't work on the older 51 and 54 point something software versions on the old Fire TV 1 and the Fire TV Stick 1. So you do need Fire OS 5, but it does work on all four, you know, different Fire TV and Fire TV Stick devices. So the service is off to a little bit of a rough start, you know, mostly because of the popularity. A lot of people are on it right now trying to use it, but I think they'll probably stabilize over time. But it's definitely intriguing, you know, for those who are looking to basically get kind of a traditional cable bundle of channels, you know, but through something like a Fire TV where you don't have actual cable subscription. So to go over the service briefly, basically you can stream it on two different devices simultaneously. So if you've got a lot of TVs in your house and you're thinking of, you know, putting Fire TVs or Fire TV sticks on all of them, if you don't already have those devices on them, and cutting the cord and basically using this as your primary TV service, do know that only two devices at a time can actually be watching. You can have the service logged in and registered with many more devices, but only two can watch simultaneously. So if you've got, you know, three different TVs that are constantly being used at the same time, this service is probably not going to be for you. But if it's basically just you've got a main TV and then maybe like a kid's bedroom or your bedroom or, you know, something like that, and it that kind of gets used occasionally, this might be okay for you. So to talk a little bit about the actual channel packages that you can get a 60 plus channel package for $35 a month. I won't talk about exactly which channels are included, but of course I'll put a link down below to this article that breaks down fully, you know, all the different channels that you can get under which packages, local channels and all that stuff. But basically, base package, 60 plus channels, it's about 65 channels, I believe, for $35, 80 channels for $50, 100 channels for $60. But this 100 channel package is actually on sale right now, introductory price for $35 a month. And so the thing about this introductory price that's interesting is that it's for life. So if you sign up during this intro plan and get this $35 a month 100 channel plus package, it's called the Go Big package. But if you get that and you lock in that price, basically for the lifetime that you have this service, you will have that price. If you change your package or cancel your service at any point in the future and the price has gone up already, then you can't get it back again. But it's kind of a way to get people to try it now and keep it early and basically go through the little instabilities that it's having, you know, just so that you lock in that $35 price. And for $35, you're getting a nice selection of channels. You know, for a lot of people, this is probably the best deal as far as big packages of basically all types of channels that you would want, you know, movie channels, news channels, kids channels, sports channels. There's a good selection there. Again, link down below to more details about the specific channels you're getting. There's also a promotion right now where you can add HBO and Cinemax for an extra $5 a month, which is a crazy deal because, you know, those networks are usually about $15 to $10 a piece. And so I don't know how long that's going to last. I don't know if you get to keep that for life. I have not read clarification on that. But for now, at least, you can add for just $5 those two premium channels. Similarly to PlayStation View, there are local channels, but it is only in specific metropolitan areas, and it's usually the big areas. So those of you who are in more rural areas, you're not going to probably get your local channels. But I've got the full list here. If you're watching the video version, you can check it out here. One thing to note is that CBS is completely missing from this service. There is no way to get CBS or CW on this DirecTV Now service right now. DirecTV Now is obviously trying to work with CBS and CW to get that in there, but right now it's not there. And the vast majority of the areas that do have local channel access don't have, you know, all three, ABC, Fox, and NBC access. A lot of them, it's really only one of those three. You know, if you're lucky, you know, only very few, like the Los Angeles area, the New York area, those are the big areas, they get all three of those channels. But most of them don't even have it. So the local access is very, very flaky with this service. The other thing people want to know with DirecTV Now is whether they can use that subscription login to activate network apps. You know, they call them TV Everywhere apps. So, you know, for example, if you have that $5 HBO plan, can you actually use that to log into the HBO app and watch through the app instead of through DirecTV Now's service and through their app? You can right now, but it's very limited. You can only do it through ABC, Disney, Disney Junior, Disney XD, ESPN, Freeform, HBO, Cinemax Go, and yeah, that's it. So just those apps right now, and Freeform and Cinemax are not even available on the Fire TV as far as app forms go. So DirecTV Now is working to get more of that added, but again, you know, down the line, hopefully they'll add more. PlayStation View actually has a lot of that covered. So the PlayStation View service, if you're subscribed there, there's a lot of different apps that you can use that to actually activate for. And whenever new apps get added, pretty much PlayStation View is already on the list of, you know, acceptable, you know, activation subscription services, whatever. But again, it's early days for DirecTV Now. They say they're going to add more in the future, but you know, for right now, it's only a very small few. Other features that these services have are DVR services. So PlayStation View has like a DVR service where you can select to actually, you know, record a certain show, and that record is like a virtual record, so it really just saves it in like a cloud account, and you can stream it down anytime you want in the next 28 days. That's basically how that works. But with DirecTV Now, there is no DVR option like that. You can pause live TV for just a few minutes on some channels in DirecTV Now, but it's very limited, so it's really not a real DVR solution or anything like that. There is a lot of on-demand content, though. I think they claim like 15,000 plus titles within DirecTV Now, something like that. So you might be able to find a lot of that stuff that you would be recording in the on-demand. But for the most part, for most reviewers that I've seen, and from my experience, just messing with it very briefly, a lot of the content that's on-demand is very sporadic. So like, you know, if there's some show, there'll be like episode 1, 3, and 5 available. And then there's no episode 2 or 4 available to stream with the on-demand option. And it's not consistent at all. It's not like you get the last X number of episode and the first one or something like that. You know, some services do that when they select their on-demand content. It's like you get the latest stuff and you get the very early stuff, so you can like get into the series or catch up with the latest episodes of the series. But DirecTV Now is nothing like that. It's just all over the place. But again, this is all new. This is very new service, so I'm sure they're still getting deals going. They're still getting more content added to it. But it's nice to see that there is a new, you know, over-the-top streaming, you know, TV subscription package service available now on the Fire TV. It's also available on other devices like the Apple TV, like the Android TV boxes. It's available there. It's not on Roku yet. They said Roku is going to be added, I think early 2017 is what they've said so far, but that will come. So one thing to note about the DirecTV Now service is that it actually detects whether your device, your Fire TV or Fire TV Stick, is rooted, and will actually not work if your device is rooted. It's because of copyright issues. They think a rooted device is more likely to steal their content, which is pretty ridiculous. It's pretty easy to steal this content regardless of whether the device is rooted or not. So I wrote this little guide about how to get around this issue. So normally you'll see this error 40QP1005 error message that might appear. That usually means that they basically detected that the device is rooted. I'll put a link down, of course, to this guide on how to get around the rooting detection for DirecTV Now. It's very easy. You just have to sideload this one app and hide the actual SU binary within the app, and You know, it's just a quick one click basically thing that you have to do, but it's a little annoying because you have to toggle it back on and off anytime you want to actually get root access to your device. But just so you know, that's down there in the description. There's actually a promo now. I totally almost forgot to mention this, but glad I remembered. They're running a promo where if you sign up and pay for your first month of service, you will get a free Fire TV stick. That's the second gen Fire TV stick. And so that first month is going to be $35. You know, if you get that 100 plus channel promo, or if you get that, you know, base, you know, 60 channel promo. And so for $35, you get a month of service, plus you get the Fire TV stick, and, you know, plus there's a 7-day free trial, regardless of whether, you know, what you sign up for, you get that free trial. So that's a pretty good deal. If you really like the service off the bat, you can go for a 3-month prepayment, and that will get you a new Apple TV. And that's a really good deal, because prepaying for 3 months at $105 will get you a $150 Apple TV device. And so you're getting that service, you're getting 3 months of the content, plus you're getting that device. I know a lot of people I saw in the comments are basically just signing up for those 3 months, getting the free Apple TV, and they're just going to chuck that thing on eBay or Craigslist because they've already got Fire TVs and all that good stuff. So that's something you'll want to look for. Of course, link down below to this article. That'll give you all the info. Link down below to the free Fire TV offer. It's basically DirecTV Now /Fire Stick. And also link to the free Apple TV offer, which is, I believe, DirecTVNow.com/Apple TV. Pretty straightforward. But again, link down below to all of this. So, you know, pretty cool. Pretty nice little new service. Hopefully it'll get better in the future. But glad to see it arrive on the Fire TV. All right, last bit of app news I'll talk about is actually an app deal and a new app, actually. So Ticket to Ride, it's not a new app in general. It's an app that's been, or a game that's been on the Amazon App Store for a while now, but it just came to the Fire TV like a little over a week ago, and it's currently free right now. I don't know how long it's going to be free, so it's normally $6.99. You can get it for free right now. Of course, link down below to where you can pick that up. It's basically a board game. It's a very popular board game that got converted into an app form. It's got online multiplayer, and the multiplayer works across different platforms. So you're not going to just be playing Fire TV devices. You're going to be playing people on smartphones. You're going to be playing people on Windows, and I think maybe even Xbox, if I'm not mistaken. And so it's very popular game, very popular app. So if you're into that, if you're into a long strategy type board game, you'll definitely want to pick this up while it's free. And even at the $6.99 price, it's a pretty good game with high reviews. So I strongly recommend it. So next up, I talked about this very briefly, was it in the last episode, I believe, when the Grand Tour was announced, and they said that the Grand Tour was coming to 200 different countries, even though Amazon Video is not in those countries yet. And so it looks like Amazon is starting to slowly roll out that, you know, access to Amazon Video, or at least their original content, from outside of the US and outside of areas where there's already Amazon Prime Video. So really only the US, the UK, Germany, Austria, Japan, those are the official Amazon Prime Video, you know, regions right now. But supposedly 200 other countries are going to get access to some Amazon content. Looks like it's already started to roll out. So I wrote this little article about it. I'll put a link down below for those of you who are in some of those countries where you've been using VPNs to access Amazon Video content. You might actually now be able to, you know, sign up for an official Amazon.com US account without having a US credit card or US address. So that's what it seems like people have been able to do. And then you can actually log into that US account from a country outside of the US and still be able to watch Amazon original content. So it looks like it's only Amazon original content right now, but hopefully they'll be adding some of that other third party content in the future. But yeah, I'll put a link down below to this so you can learn more if you are in that scenario where you're not in one of those official Amazon Prime Video countries. But it looks like Amazon is actually making it a little more lenient to view some of their original content, you know, across the globe. And next up, on a similar note with Amazon content, so HBO and Cinemax were just added to the Amazon Channels lineup. For those who don't know, Amazon Channels is where you can actually expand your Amazon Prime Video content to be across other networks. So there are currently a little bit over 80 different, you know, basically packages and networks that you can select from, each one with its own individual subscription fee that you can add to your Amazon Prime Video account. and pay that little bit extra to have more content. And so when the service first launched, their basically flagship networks were Showtime and Stars. Those were the two big ones. And so now they've added another two big ones, which is HBO and Cinemax. The price, unfortunately, is what you would expect from just the standalone price of these services. So HBO is $14.99 a month, and then Cinemax is $9.99 a month. But there are some advantages to adding it through Amazon. That is that you're going to be able to use it through the native Fire TV interface and the native Amazon Video app interface on all those different devices that Amazon Video is on. And so the content is streaming from Amazon servers, and so you can basically get all that content in the same interface and the same reliable source, so you don't have to deal with HBO servers or Cinemax servers and that sort of stuff. And so, you know, other little advantages, I'll put a link down below to where you can learn more about that in this article that talks a little bit more about those advantages. All right, next up in non-Amazon Fire TV and Amazon Video news, we've got some news about Echo device that's kind of running around in the rumors. So there's this premium Echo device, according to Bloomberg. Some sources have told Bloomberg some more details about this. We've heard about this in the past now. I mean, it's been like a good 6 or 7 months, I think, that we've been hearing some rumors of this new premium Echo device that's going to come out. Basically, it has a 7-inch touchscreen, according to Bloomberg. We did know that there was going to be some Alexa always listening device with a touchscreen, kind of like a tablet, that was going to come out. But now it sounds like it's going to be a premium speaker, which also has that touchscreen on there. And the purpose of the touchscreen is so that you can actually get more content or additional information when you make Alexa requests. So the device, it sounds like, is going to function just like the Amazon Echo, where it's always listening. You can call out to it, make a request through Alexa, get information there. But, you know, after you actually get that verbal request of information, there will be more information on the actual touchscreen. And so, for example, if you ask for the weather, you'll get not just the current day's weather, you might get a 7-day forecast. This is similar to what you see on the Fire TV right now. If you use the voice remote on the Fire TV or the Fire TV stick and you ask for information from Alexa, you'll often get more information than is verbally spoken to you on the actual Fire TV's interface. Amazon calls them cards. They've actually been getting Alexa skill developers, these are third-party developers, to incorporate card info in the Alexa app itself. So if you have a tablet or a smartphone with the Alexa app, when you actually make an Alexa request, you'll see information show up within the app itself. It's kind of inconvenient. Like, I wouldn't expect most people to take out their phone after making an Alexa request just to read the information in the card that's in the Alexa app. But now we're kind of seeing that the whole purpose of these cards that they're getting developers to add to their skills is this touchscreen that's coming on this premium device. So this premium Echo, we assume it's going to carry the Echo branding. So you've got the Amazon Echo, the Echo Dot, and so this will be some kind of other premium Echo. Sounds like this is going to basically compete with, premium speakers, your Bose speakers or your top, $200 plus, I would imagine. This is my guess. They haven't really talked about numbers yet, but I would expect it to cost more than the $180 Amazon Echo. So expect this to be, I would say, at least $200 and up. The way I see it, the Echo Dot is $50. So you figure the guts of Alexa, essentially, that smarts, is $50 or so. And then it's a 7-inch touchscreen tablet. So you figure it's kind of the screen guts portion of the Fire tablet, the base Fire tablet, which is $50 itself. And so if you combine those two devices together, shave off some cost there, because obviously you don't have the full tablet interface there, and you don't have the actual, built-in little tiny speaker in the Echo Dot. So if you combine those two $50 devices together, I figure the tablet and the Alexa capabilities run right around $80 or so. And then, just add that on top of to whatever premium speaker they're going to include with it. And so if you look at like a $200 or $300 premium speaker, if this competes with it, you're going to figure it's going to cost $280 to $380, if assuming the audio quality is on par with those premium speakers. So that'll kind of give you a rough idea of what this might go for, as far as what I think. And one thing that's really interesting is that this is going to run Fire OS. So it's going to be Android based. So it's going to actually have a lot more in common with the Fire TV line of devices than it does with the Amazon Echo line of devices, because those do not run Android, those do not run Fire OS. They do run a variant of Linux, but it is not Android there. So really interesting. I mean, I'm really excited to see what this thing has. One thing they say is that the screen itself is supposed to, you know, articulate and be able to swivel up and down, so that if you do have this on like a kitchen counter, for example, you can actually look down on it and actually rotate the screen so that it's pointing straight up. But if you have this on a shelf, like on a bookshelf, you can rotate the screen to actually point straight out of it, as far as, you know, not straight up. So sounds like it's going to be very flexible. You know, I would imagine most commonly this will be placed like in a living room, in a bookshelf, or possibly in the kitchen, to serve as like a kitchen hub of sorts, where you can get all your information, you can get music, and maybe even be able to watch video on it. I mean, who knows? If this thing's running Fire OS, there's nothing stopping them from letting you actually watch video through its little 7-inch screen. So really interesting. Supposedly going to come out first quarter 2017. So still early, you know, we're not going to see it this year, but definitely I'll have more on it. I'll definitely pick one up once it's available. So keep it locked here for more info on that. But exciting to see new hardware come out. Next, real quick, I want to mention there are some changes with Amazon's Cloud Drive it's fairly significant. I'm a big user of Amazon's Cloud Drive, so I noticed this and was excited about this. But their desktop software has added the ability to sync files now. So it's similar to how Dropbox works. There's now a dedicated Amazon Drive folder on your device. And if you want, you can select different folders in your Amazon Drive, and those will stay synced. And so if you have multiple devices, you can keep your Amazon Drive files synced across devices. Very nice little feature. I like it. I'm going to probably be using it. So I did want to mention it very briefly. And in another similar news, Amazon has actually teamed up with Seagate to release this official Amazon Drive external hard drive, essentially. So it's a 1 terabyte hard drive. Costs $99.99. So a little bit expensive for a 1 terabyte drive. Those, you know, a Seagate equivalent drive without this Amazon Drive incorporation into it would run you right around $50 to $55. And so $99 is definitely expensive. But the added bonus is that this drive actually comes with a year of unlimited Amazon Drive access, and that runs you normally $60. And so if you take that $60, subtract it from the $100 you have to pay for the drive, you're essentially getting the drive for $40. So it's an okay deal there if you have not subscribed to the Amazon Unlimited Drive subscription, because this is only for new customers. So if you've been thinking about subscribing to Amazon Cloud Drive's unlimited service, this might be a good way to do it, is to get that full first year, plus you'll get this 1 terabyte drive. And supposedly this 1 terabyte drive automatically syncs all of its content up with the Amazon Cloud Drive. So it's kind of like a very simple novice way of, you know, basically having external backup and having that backup offsite as well. All right, next up, very briefly before we move on to the Q&A section, I did want to talk about this. So I released my Amazon device buyer's guide. You probably already heard about it because I released it before Black Friday. But if you haven't, here's a little quick overview of it. I said I was going to release it in my previous podcast episode, but I've done so now. So I wanted to just talk about it very briefly. Basically, this is a dedicated section of AFTVnews.com now. I'm going to keep it updated and keep it live. The main purpose of this buyer's guide is, one, to help you figure out what's a good price for all of Amazon's devices. That includes the Fire TV, the Fire tablets, all the Echoes, and all the Kindles. And so I've broken down basically what's the regular price, what's an okay price, what's a good price, what's a great price. Essentially, great price you can consider as like the rock bottom price, you know, the Prime Day prices, the Black Friday prices, the Cyber Monday prices. Those 3 days are when we'll see those great prices. And so if you want to hold out for those days, which actually all just pretty much passed, but that's when you'll see the great prices. Good prices are, you know, come around more often. We usually see those a few times a year. Sometimes they'll just, you know, the device will just go on sale randomly for no particular event or anything. But, you know, those good prices do come around on those non-specific Black Friday, you know, Prime Day days. And then the okay price is just, you know, kind of like If you don't want to pay full price, but you don't want to wait for those really special, great prices, you know, the okay price is what you should look for just a general sale. You know, if the device goes on sale at all, it usually hits that okay price mark. So that kind of gives you a rough idea of where the okay, the good, and the great price stand. Basically, the okay price comes around every 1 or 2 months. The good price comes around a few times a year, and the great price pretty much comes around once or twice a year at most. And so, you know, if you hit that great price, you should definitely hop on the device if you have been waiting to buy it. The other thing that the buyer's guide does is actually break down how old each device's generation is. And so you can see here for the Fire TV, the first generation device that lasted 542 days while it was the main device, and then it got updated to the second gen device, and that second gen device has currently been out for 424 days. So that kind of gives you a good idea of roughly when this device is going to be updated. So, you know, roughly in 100 more days, we might expect a new Fire TV to come out if Amazon sticks to that same schedule. You can see here with the Fire TV Stick, for example, that lasted a long time, 700 days since Amazon, released that first gen Fire TV Stick to when they just recently updated the second gen Fire TV Stick. And so as you can see here, it's a great time to buy the Fire TV Stick because the device was just updated just over a month ago. So it's a brand new device. That device is not going to go out of date anytime soon. You know, we don't expect that to go and be updated for at least another year, you know, probably more so than that. That's basically the main purpose of this page. Again, you can hit the tabs to break it down by device category. So the Fire tablets, you can see here the Echo. The main Echo is due for an update. That's why there's probably this new premium Echo coming out. It's going to kind of almost replace the Amazon Echo, whereas the premium Echo is going to be the main, you know, top tier device, and the Amazon Echo Dot is going to be the base device essentially. So yeah, I'll put a link down below, of course, to this buyer's guide. You can get to it in my main navigation menu on AFTVnews.com. So anytime there's a sale for any of Amazon's devices, you can check where that sale falls in the historical scheme of things as far as all sales go. And I'll try to keep this updated in the future anytime new sales come around. All right, moving on, let's get into the Q&A section. As always, I put a post up on AFTVnews.com on Thursdays asking people to submit their questions for me to try to answer here or address on the podcast episode. Got a few questions, so let's go ahead, jump right into things. First question here is from Oz Meyer. He's saying that his Fire TV 2's music app only allows him to listen to Prime Music, but he's not getting Amazon Music Unlimited through it. I'd say you have to make sure that you are on the not on the Amazon Echo only plan. That's the first thing to make sure there. You know, the Amazon Music Unlimited has come out now over a month ago, so you're going to be out of that free trial period. So whatever you signed up for, you know, initially, that's the plan that's going to be in effect. And so if you're on that Amazon Echo only plan, you're not going to be able to get that through the Fire TV for sure. The other thing is this current version of the music app on the Fire TV is kind of an interim app, because we're waiting for that new interface to come along. That interface was basically made for this app, or vice versa. This app was made for that interface. And so hopefully it works a little better. If it is buggy and if it is not letting you get to that Amazon Music Unlimited, hopefully with the new interface, once you get that on your Fire TV, that music app will work a lot better, I hope. All right, next question here is from Ken. He says, you mentioned using a NAS with Amazon Drive for backups in your post about Amazon adding file sync to Cloud Drive. Could you elaborate more on your backup setup? Yeah, for sure. I'll talk about that a little bit. I have a NAS device. I have a Synology DS214, I believe it is. I have a link. If you go to aftvnews.com/mygear, that's a list of all of the hardware that I basically own, computing and media hardware. A long time ago in an early podcast episode, somebody asked me to make that list. And so I put that there. You can also get to it in my navigation about section on the site. But yeah, aftvnews.com/mygear, that'll list my exact devices. So I think I have the Synology DS214, but essentially it's a NAS device, network attached storage device. It's got two hard drives in there, mirroring RAID 1. So anything that goes onto one drive mirrors automatically to the other one. So it's got a backup there. And then Synology has a very nice interface. It's one of the main reasons I bought that particular NAS device. But they integrate very well with Amazon Drive. You basically just load up the Amazon Drive, you know, extension add-on in their OS, essentially, of the Synology drive. Log into your Amazon account, and then you basically just select which folders on the NAS device you want to stay in sync with your Amazon Drive. And I have an Amazon Drive account with unlimited service. You know, it's $59.99 a year, I believe. And so I just use that basically as my main offsite backup. Synology has apps for basically all platforms, Macs, Windows, smartphones, you name it. You know, they've got all of that covered, and you install the app basically on your desktop, and that you can select which folders on your desktop get synced to the NAS. You can have sync go both ways. So if you want basically like a Dropbox effect, essentially where files that you remove are deleted all over the place, or if you only want it to go one way where basically when you add files on the PC, it always goes to the NAS and never gets deleted off of the NAS, you can do that as well. And then I have basically set up specific folders on my devices to be synced to my NAS. And then I have Synology's NAS software syncing those folders up to Amazon Drive. And that is my 3-2-1 backup solution. Basically, you know, I mentioned this in my article where it's three copies of everything on two different mediums. And so, you know, one copy is on my local PCs, the other copy is on my NAS, and then one of them being offsite, which is on Amazon's drive. So that's my backup solution, my backup setup. I'm really happy with it so far. I've tried Carbonite, I've tried CrashPlan, I've tried Backblaze. All of those have issues on them on their own, and they all cost about that $50 to $60 a year. And I just found that the flexibility of Amazon Drive basically knocks out all of those, you know. But you do have to have that NAS kind of working as the software, you know. The advantage of those services that I mentioned, those backup services, is that they're very simple to set up. You basically just install the software on your PC, but they are a little bit limited, and you definitely cannot just upload your own files manually onto their cloud, you know, their cloud storage. Whereas with Amazon Drive, you can do that. So that's my personal backup solution. That's how I have things set up. It works really nicely for me. All right, next question here from Damien. He's asking me to talk a little bit about why firmware updates on like the Fire TV comes out in groups rather than just coming out universally on all devices. It's a good topic to cover, I think. So the main reason Amazon does this is so that they can detect issues early if there are issues with the new update. So they basically roll them out to just a few devices, and they see, do people complain about anything? Do these devices act funny? Do they go offline for some reason? Do certain services stop working? That sort of stuff. And then once they are a little more confident in things, then they'll start rolling it out to a few more devices and so on and so forth until it gets rolled out to everyone. So it's a slow rollout. The way Amazon does it specifically for the Fire TV is that your place in line when you get these updates never changes. So if you have a Fire TV that updates early and is one of the first ones to update, it will always be one of the first ones to update. And if your device is one of the last ones to update, it will always be one of the last ones. This is based on the serial number and is pretty much random. So if you have multiple Fire TV devices, it doesn't mean they'll all update at the same time and your personal Amazon account has a place in line. It's actually on a per device basis. You know, I personally have 11 or so Fire TV devices that I use for testing, and all of them update at different times, but pretty much they all update in the same order. And so that's basically the reason why these updates roll out slowly. Next question here from Bradley saying, is getting the new Fire TV stick worth it if you have the first gen Fire TV stick? Really depends. If all you're doing is streaming video, I would say no. You know, if you're happy with the Fire TV stick and it's doing what you need it to do, and mostly all you're doing with it is video streams, Netflix, Amazon Video, that sort of stuff. Even Kodi, Mr. MC, SPMC, that sort of stuff. Fire TV Stick 1 works great. Main advantage to the Fire TV Stick 2 is, as far as video goes, is that X265 decoding capability. And so if you've got your own library and you've got videos encoded in that codec, then you can use that there. Otherwise, it's a little more powerful, so it can play a lot more games. But you know, if you're not doing much gaming on the device, there's really not much of a reason to update. Our next question is from Shiva. They're asking about my personal network setup at my house and as far as how I have smart home devices set up and that sort of stuff. I actually just recently upgraded to a Linksys AC1200 router. I think that's what it is again. At my AFTVnews.com/mygear. I've got it listed there for the exact model number. But pretty happy with it. As far as smart home devices go, I personally still don't have too many. I have a few Belkin outlets, you know, those Wemo smart outlets. That's pretty much it. I still don't have all of my light bulbs, you know, switched to smart light bulbs and that sort of stuff. I'm kind of holding out just a little bit there. Shiva says they're remodeling the house and they're looking to redo their network. My suggestion personally is to look into some of those network solutions that actually have like multiple devices, multiple network access points that you can put around the house that all work together to create kind of like a mesh network. Google just released their own hardware for that. I forget off the top of my head the brand that I've heard a lot of good things for. I'll put a link down below once I edit this and I'll look into the actual brand name that I'm thinking of or the product that I'm thinking of. But again, it's like you instead of buying one router, you buy basically a package of like three routers and you put them across your home. They work together to transfer connections as you move across your house with different devices. Personally, if I was starting from scratch or remodeling, I would go with that route. But definitely with a newer device, a newer router that is, assuming it can, you know, reach all of the different areas of your house, the newer ones can usually connect to, you know, a lot of different devices. So there isn't much concern for having a lot of smart home devices on your network. You know, before you used to only have your PCs, then you had your smartphones, and then you had tablets. And so that wasn't too many devices. But now if you have like a house full of light bulbs, I mean, you can like, you know, triple the amount of devices connected to your network just by basically, you know, upgrading to smart light bulbs there. And so it is important to have a relatively new router, you know, for that can handle a lot of different devices. And that's why these new mesh network routers are doing a good job with that. All right, that will conclude episode number 64 of the AFTV Newscast. Thank you so much for watching. Of course, if you're watching this on YouTube, please hit that like button down below and subscribe to my YouTube channel. I'm almost at 3,000 subscribers, which is awesome, which is a huge landmark for myself. So please subscribe to the channel. Get me above that 3,000 mark. I'd really appreciate it. And the hitting that like button just helps, you know, give me a little bit more exposure. Lets me know that you actually enjoy what I'm doing. So really appreciate it anytime you guys hit that like button as well. Thank you so much for watching. Of course, you can get the episode in audio versions also through, you know, any popular podcast client. You can search for AFTV News or AFTV Newscast and subscribe there if you just want to listen to the audio version on your commute or while you're exercising or while you're cleaning around the house or cooking or anything like that. Really appreciate those subscriptions as well. Again, thanks for watching and I hope to see you next week.